Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson, and we're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, I know we've talked about filling a pulpit in a past podcast, but at that time we said we would have more later, and here we are. So what thoughts do you have about filling the pulpit when a pastor's away?
Well, I think some pastors, although they might not admit it, subconsciously think if I get someone who's not very good, then they'll be really appreciative when I come back. I don't see that as a very good philosophy. I think that when I'm gone from the pulpit, I want to fill it with the best possible person. And then people are going to say, wow, look at who he got to fill the pulpit when he was away. He must be something, you know. So I want it to be a time when people are thrilled that they've been to church. There's something called momentum, Dean, and it's hard to capture in a church. But you know when you have it, there's a certain steam that is built up. And if you're gone one Sunday and you have a loser fill the pulpit for you, it really kills the momentum. And it takes two or three Sundays even to get it back again. You only got 52 Sundays in the course of a year, so you don't want to have a downer when all of a sudden you have this moving forward and then plop, and then you have to build back once again. So I'm going to look for the very best possible person I can find. And I'm going to say, how do I get that individual to fill in for me? And that's not that hard to do. And at the same time, I'm going to try to fill that person in and say, this is where the church is. This is what you could talk to that would be most effective in terms of where we are. Here's why I ask you, and so on. So you're trying to say, even though I'm not there, how do I keep that momentum going? That's a big thing.
It sounds like intentionality is a big part of this. So how do you get the best person possible?
Well, if you're in that situation, I would say you probably have to work far ahead, because certain people, they're going to have busy schedules as well. But then when you make the request to that person, you say, I'm writing you because of a very special time in the life of our church. I'm going to be away. Here is what is happening. You fill that individual in, and then you say, this is why I want you to come. And it's amazing. People, if they understand and they feel like the Lord is in this, they will say yes to your request. When I was on radio and people knew me pretty much around the country, and we're talking some years back now, I remember I received a request from a church in a little place in Kansas State, and I never would have heard of it, but they just didn't say, we have a Sunday to fill, would you come? They said, this is the reason we want you to come. Our people hear you on the radio. This is our, I think it was the 150th anniversary. We feel your message would be exactly what we have in mind. So we have been praying as we write to you. You know, you get invitation like that. You say, well, bless those people. That is really something. I think I would like to do that. And they're asking you for maybe a half to a three quarters of a year ahead. And you say, I'd like to go there. That would be wonderful. And they say, you know, you've probably spoken to many congregations in the big city because you're from Chicago, but you haven't been to a farm congregation and you haven't experienced farm hospitality. And at a certain point you say, I really want to do that. This sounds like a good idea. That's how you get a person to come. You tell them why they're special, why you want them there, and then you make this great invitation they can't turn down.
Yeah, that sounds like wonderful opportunities. As you describe it, I can't imagine anyone turning them down. That's a great...
it was a great experience for me. Experience. I remember that specific time and the meals they had. And when I went there, they were so pleased that I had come. And I thought, I'm not that great, you know. But I was glad that I had come, and they were pleased, and it was a great experience for me. That's how you get someone.
The last time we talked about this subject, we talked about using people that you might have available in your own congregation, whether it's an intern or layperson, and we talked about how the pastor can make the individual look really good by working with them ahead of time, and that's certainly an important aspect. When you're inviting someone notable to come in to your congregation to speak, or someone that's away from your congregation to come in, what are some of the things that you can do to work with them so that when they come, they're going to be much more effective in what they do than if you just invited them and they just showed up almost on a cold basis?
Well, they probably have old number one or two or whatever, you know, they've preached these sermons many, many times. And those are good sermons. And it may be that it's very appropriate for your church and you don't have to say anything. I think the more an individual knows about the situation, the more they are able to tailor their message for what is going to be most effective. And if you can say, you know, this is not my strength area, but I think it's your strength area. And if you could do the following, and then you lay that out for them. I find it hard when I go to a church and I know nothing about what is there to try to specifically craft a message. So I'm much more likely to go back to an old one that I've preached many times and I know is effective. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. That would be fine. You did mention something, and I do want to go back to this. There are times when you want to, as a pastor who is mentoring younger fellows coming along or younger women who have the ability to speak, you do want to give them opportunities. But I think the worst thing that you can do is just say, would you take my pulpit on such and such a day? And you minimize the huge amount of experience you have and all these lessons you've learned that go into crafting a sermon, and then you let them totally on their own and don't give them any direction. That would be really wrong. I would say, if I had an intern say, I want you to preach for me someday, but I'd like for you to put together maybe two or three sermon ideas that you could do, and let me see those and see if one of them could be crafted for where our church happens to be at the time. I wouldn't necessarily give a date and just say, okay, that's covered now, and I go away and don't think anything about it. I would want to say to them, you know, what is your subject going to be? Do I have a response that is workable here? What is the how-to, just as you were saying? And I'd work it through with them and probably even ask them, you know, months on out to begin to show me where that sermon is going. Because I think that's a great training process. But just to say, okay, I'm going to be gone, you take it, I don't think that's fair. And I think it's unfair to the congregation as well, because you're putting somebody in there who's had very little experience. And again, you're going to cut your momentum. You're allowing the possibility that they're not going to do as well as you usually will do. And that's a negative experience for them. And then on top of that, a lot of times I think ministers come back and they never listen to a tape of what went on. And it's just that person filled in. People said it was nice or it wasn't nice, you know, and then it's over. But it's not a learning experience. So I would strongly caution against that kind of an approach when you're filling your pulpit.
I'm thinking through this, trying to process what you're saying, and I can see distinct advantages to being as effective as possible and helping whoever's going to replace you in the pulpit to be as prepared as possible in the case perhaps of a layperson or a staff member that you're mentoring, and also in giving information to someone that's coming in so that they're familiar with your congregation, where the congregation is, the specific needs they might have, the strengths that the person coming in might have that you don't, and also giving them a little bit of an idea of where you think the people are in their particular spiritual walk as a congregation, because in addition to individual spiritual walks, a congregation sort of has a spiritual walk as well. What if, despite all of your efforts, the people aren't cooperative? By that I mean the people that you're asking to fill the pulpit, they're not really interested in what you have to say.
I've never had that happen, so I don't know how I would respond to it. Partly, I take very seriously that Sunday morning time, and I'm going to get feedback as to how it went. I think the worst thing that can happen is, and I don't like this, when I preach somewhere, I never hear from the minister. You know, I filled in, I did my very best, and that was it. I left, they gave me a check, you know, that was over. I always would make it a point to listen as much as possible, a tape. Usually the services are taped. So I could say, you know, this was very effective. I can respond to the person, say thank you for doing such and such. So in my mind, there's that, once the person preached, it's just not, okay, that's taken care of, now we're back to me again. But I'm giving feedback to the people who came. I spoke out in the West Coast, and I got really good feedback from two or three people who were there, who were on a leadership level, of saying, you did exactly what we wanted you to. Thank you for the conversations we had. That was very meaningful to me. In fact, recently I spoke at a group out there, and they wrote me back and said, would you mind if for our people, we would put these four messages you gave into a booklet and make them available because we had a lot of comments on them. We don't want to infringe on any rights you might have on your material or any of that, which is very kind of them. And next thing I knew, I got one of the little booklets in the mail. And they said, we've given out like 150 of these now, and it's been very popular. That's huge to me. I just find it very satisfying. So the relationship continues, and someday maybe they'll ask me to come back again. You know, I'll be disappointed if they don't make another booklet. I think another thing for a person who comes in to speak, which in my mind is important, and because I do pulpit fill enough, is when you're finished, hopefully there's an honorarium. I've never said this is what you have to pay me, but usually you're going to get an honorarium. I've never preached somewhere where I've traveled and whatever. They don't at least send money for your expenses. But if that could be given to the person when they're there, that's a good thing. Even with a note from the pastor, you know, I'm away, so I'm not here to hear you speak, but I'm very honored that you came, and this is an honorarium from the group. And that's given to you at the time that you were there. That's much more meaningful than maybe, you know, a month and a half later, getting a check just in the mail with nothing but a check. That's not nearly as personal. I don't like it that way. So I like it when the treasurer comes up to me and says, thank you, this is from the church, and this is for your expenses, and this is the extra. That's just common courtesy in my mind.
It's interesting, as we've talked through this subject now on two podcasts, one quite a while ago and the one today, it occurs to me that the way that a pastor approaches the filling of the pulpit in his or her absence is also a mark of humility in that pastor's life. There's something about taking care to do as much as you can to make the person who's filling the pulpit as comfortable and as up-to-date and knowledgeable about the congregation. And also, if you're working with someone on your staff that you're mentoring, or if you're working with a member of your congregation to help them come along to the point where they can fill the pulpit, there's definitely a mark of humility on the part of the pastor that makes that kind of activity a blessing both to the person that the pastor is working with and to the pastor himself or herself. And I think humility is a really good thing in a pastoral ministry, not a false self-deprecating humility, but humility in the willingness to extend yourself beyond what might be considered normal in order to make sure that the ministry on behalf of the kingdom goes forward in your absence.
That's very good. One of those marks of humility in my mind, Dean, is even how you're introduced to the congregation. I think that part of the job when you're away is to make sure that someone gives a proper introduction to that person. And if nothing else, that you write an introduction that's proper, and then it's in the bulletin, and that could be read. Because you're coming in as a stranger. I don't care how well you're known, there are going to be people who never heard of you, have no idea of your background, so that it's again, that humility on the part of the host pastor who says, I want to make sure this is a good experience for you, and that these people know how highly I value you and the time that you've given to come and to speak to us. So all those are just the little common courtesies that are very important.
Very good. Well, we are grateful that you were here for our podcast today. We thank you for joining us for our time together. And we invite you, as we always do, to visit our website, sermoncoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. And we invite you to join us for our next SermonCoach.com podcast.